Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Last time, I delivered the first installment of my talk on ego and egotism. Inshallah, today I will continue and share with you more teachings of Muslim ethicists and mystics, Rumi in particular. Let's do a quick recap of what I presented last time. The word ego is actually a Latin word. It stands for I in the English language. The three-letter word ego has been used by philosophers, psychologists, and also spiritual teachers for centuries. However, this three-letter word ego carries a different meaning for different scholars and schools of thought. And that's what makes this concept so confusing. It doesn't have a uniform meaning in the literature, so I suggest you never Google the word ego and start reading articles. You're going to be really, really confused. My talk on ego and egoism is really concerned with the teachings of Muslim ethicists and mystics. So here I'm not talking about ego as somebody like Sigmund Freud perceives it or other psychologists. Just, you know, what ego and egoism mean in Islamic literature. In the literature of Muslim ethicists and mystics, ego and egoism carry a negative meaning. It is actually based on the famous Quranic term nafs-e ammare, carnal soul or lower self. As you perhaps know, the carnal soul, nafs-e ammare, commands the person to do evil. The carnal soul breeds nasty habits. It breeds character flaws. So egoism is really an aspect of the carnal soul. It grows out of the carnal soul or nafs-e ammare. As I mentioned last time, at its core, ego is essentially an idea, right? It's an idea that is formed by the fundamental question every single one of us at some point in our life is confronted with. Who am I? Who am I? The answer we provide to this question shapes our self-perception. In turn, our self-perception will shape our motivations and our choices. It will drive our behavior. Things go wrong when we define ourselves with things that are external to us. That's where the problem starts. When we define ourselves with, for example, possessions, trophies, career, fame, so on and so forth. Muslim mystics would argue that if this is how we define ourselves, we will have a false self-perception. And this sort of false self-perception will breed a nasty personality trait, selfishness. Selfishness actually grows out of a false self-perception. Today, inshallah, I will talk about selfishness, what selfishness means, what are its various faces and forms. So let me make a very quick point to avoid a common misperception. Selfishness is different from self-esteem, self-respect, self-love, and also self-interest. So we should not confuse selfishness with these other terms. Selfishness is bad, but self-esteem is very good. Self-respect, self-love is very good. We should all strive to have self-esteem and self-respect. We should value ourselves. We should also pursue our self-interest. After all, our interests revolve around our needs, our wants and aspirations. And that's what we are here for in this life on earth, to pursue our aspirations. None of these equate to selfishness. None of these latter terms that I mentioned, such as self-esteem and self-love, imply selfishness. Unfortunately, I don't have much time to go over these other concepts, but suffice it to say that selfishness is quite different from those other concepts. Selfishness essentially is being excessively and exclusively concerned for our own advantage, our own welfare and pleasure at the expense of others. When we want other people to serve us. In the Islamic tradition, selfishness is considered the mother of all vices. Selfishness is the mother of all vices. Selfishness breeds all vices, such as lying, deceit, lust, greed, envy, arrogance, and so forth. All vices are essentially different faces of the very same thing. Selfishness. Right? Vices are all symptoms of the same disease, selfishness. Throughout a typical day, selfishness would show its ugly face in many different ways. In one instance, selfishness shows its face as lying. In another instance, it shows its face as jealousy, and then hatred, so on and so forth. In each situation, selfishness puts on a mask, right? Selfishness puts on a different mask and reveals itself in a unique way. But behind the mask lies one ugly reality, selfishness. Now, what I just shared with you, that selfishness is the mother of all vices, is a critical insight. If I want to shed my vices, such as envy, arrogance, and backbiting, I really don't need to treat each one of those flaws individually. In other words, I don't have to work on envy first, fix that problem, move on to the next flaw that I have, let's say arrogance, deal with it, fix it, and then move on to backbiting, so on and so forth. There is a much simpler way to address all of our character flaws, all of our vices. You know what that is? The root cause of all of those flaws is selfishness. If we can cure selfishness, all of those vices and character flaws will wither away. By the way, let me make one other quick point before I move on. Selfishness or egoism is not a fixed thing. Selfishness has grades. It has intensity. For most of us, selfishness will not go away completely. It won't go away completely. But we should at least aim to lower the intensity of our selfishness. We should strive to manage our ego so it will not become destructive. So that's the bare minimum we should attempt to do. It probably trying to get rid of selfishness completely, maybe that's a bar too high for most of us, including myself. Now, let's get more practical. And I think this would make Ladan Khanom very happy because she wants practical information. Let me share with you some practical clues that your ego may getting big. What I'm going to share with you right now are some trouble signs, some warning signs that you should not ignore. Let's say I tend to dislike someone succeeding. I get upset when my sibling or coworker shines in the office. This is a sign that my ego perceives another person's gain unnecessarily as its loss. Brothers and sisters, life should not be viewed as a zero-sum game. Unfortunately, many of us see life as a zero-sum game. If somebody gains, that's our loss. That's not the way God intended us to live. When other people's success upsets me, this is a sign that my ego is insecure, that my ego feels threatened, and fear is closely linked to egoism. Why? Because the ego likes to dominate every situation and every relationship. Any threat to that dominance would generate fear. The next trouble sign. Let's say I crave for attention and limelight. That's a sign of trouble. I try to gain attention in various ways. That expensive watch, that fancy car, that dress that I wear with a special logo on it, which cost me a lot of money. I want to show off. I want to make a statement that I am superior. Another trouble sign. Let's say I see myself as better, smarter, and nicer than others. And unfortunately, many of us suffer from this flaw. Now, there is a dynamic behind this. What is that dynamic? I see myself in constant competition with others. Because I see myself in constant competition with others, that I want to prove to myself, or at least convince myself, that hey, I'm better, I'm nicer, more beautiful, smarter, I have higher IQ than other people. But this competition only exists in my head. And that's a sign that my ego wants to be superior to others and dominate others. Another trouble sign. Let's say it pleases me to talk about other people's imperfections. Again, that's a sign that my ego wants to find flaws and imperfections on others in order to feel superior and dominant. Another one. I want credit for every idea at my house. My spouse doesn't have any good ideas. All good ideas in the household are mine. I demand credit for every good idea in the workplace, in the office, in the community center. That's a sign that my ego wants to push others out of the way and make room for itself. All right, we don't have that much time. Let me give you one more practical clue about probably my ego getting big. I tend to dominate conversations and meetings. I stop others from expressing their ideas and their views. That is a troubling sign that maybe my ego is getting big. And actually, this is a hallmark of dictator wannabes. A lot of us really want to be dictators, except we don't have the means to become dictators. If the opportunity presents itself, yeah, I would love to be the next Khamenei or the next Saddam, as much as I claim to hate them. Well, I hate the person and not the character type. And that's the problem that most of us have. Okay, so these were some examples, some practical clues and warning signs of an ego getting really big. As I was going through these trouble signs, you probably noticed that I used the term dominance a few times. A bloated ego loves to dominate. And dominance is all about control. Control. Selfish people are control freaks. Selfish people are control freaks. They want to control every situation. They want to dominate relationships, conversations, and what have you. As if all relationships, all conversations are about them. The viewpoints, the interests, and the needs of other parties involved are not important to the selfish person. He tries to control a situation by taking charge. He does everything he can to dominate, to control. And brothers and sisters, there are so many soft and hard ways to dominate. One hard way to dominate is through intimidation and threats, through coercion. But believe me, there are softer, gentler ways to take charge and control others. One of them is manipulation. When we manipulate other people, that's a sign that maybe we are a control freak. Now, there is another aspect to selfishness which our mystics are very keen about. Now, if you are serious about character development, if you are serious about soul development, you may want to pay particular attention to what I have to share with you now. Well, in most cases, selfishness is obscure. It's hidden. It's concealed. Interesting, isn't it? Don't think for a second that selfishness is always very obvious. No, most of the time, selfishness is concealed. Relative obscurity of selfishness sometimes makes it very difficult to diagnose and cure the problem. Often, selfishness is concealed, and that's what I want to talk about for the next few minutes. In many cases, we may not be even aware that the driver for a certain action we take or a certain stance we take is selfishness. Prejudice is a good example. Did you know that prejudice is rooted in selfishness? Let me explain. Prejudice, or taassub in Farsi, is an expression of selfishness, even though most of us perhaps don't see any connection between prejudice and selfishness. Now, since prejudice is such a common problem in almost all human communities, I will draw upon Rumi's teachings to elaborate on this pesky bad habit. What does prejudice mean? Well, prejudice is an unfavorable opinion, unfavorable belief or feeling that is formed about someone before even getting to know them on a deeper level. In other words, before even we try to know that person, we form a bad or unfavorable opinion about him or her. The unfavorable opinion or belief may be based on religion, on ethnicity, culture, disability, and so forth. The key feature of prejudice is lack of knowledge, lack of facts and evidence before we judge. The proper thing to do is before we judge somebody or a situation is to gather information and become knowledgeable about it. Prejudice short-circuits this whole process. Rumi says, prejudice is a veil. Prejudice is a veil. It's a veil that falls on our good sense and on our reason. It clouds our reasoning and judgment. And perhaps worse, Rumi says, prejudice prevents us from seeing the goodness and beauty in others. Rumi says, چون قرز آمد هنر پوشیده شد صد حجاب از دل به سوی دیده شد. When prejudice appears, virtue becomes hidden. 100 veils rise from the heart to the eye. That's how Rumi perceives prejudice. When prejudice kicks in, it blinds the person. Then he will not be able to recognize the virtue, the goodness, and the beauty of the other person. Many incorrectly think that it is lack of information that creates prejudice. Not true, according to Rumi. Lack of information would create ignorance, not prejudice. Prejudice is rooted in the ego's desire to see the other as inferior. The ego's desire to see the other as undeserving. And this will boost the ego's desire for superiority. The ego wants to believe that goodness, beauty, and virtue only lies with me. Beauty, virtue, goodness only lies with my religion, my political party, my country, and my tribe. Anyone outside my circle lacks goodness and beauty. Rumi says, this is a delusion. This is a delusion because goodness and beauty are scattered everywhere. It is not only one community that can lay claim on goodness, virtue, and beauty. It is the bloated ego that prevents us from seeing beauty and goodness everywhere. Rumi draws upon the famous story of Layli and Majnun to make this point. Layli and Majnun, by the way, is the equivalent of Romeo and Juliet in the Western culture. Rumi says, the caliph had heard of the sizzling love story of Layli, Juliet, and Majnun, or Romeo. The caliph said to himself, Layli must be really gorgeous for Majnun to have madly fallen in love with her. So the caliph summoned Layli to his palace to check out Layli for himself. When Layli arrived in the palace and the caliph saw her, the caliph was not impressed at all. Layli did not appear pretty to him at all. The caliph said to himself, "What in the world does Majnun see in her?" The caliph then turned to Layli and said, گفت لیلی را خلیفه کان تویی که از تو مجنون شد پریشان و قبی از دگر خوبان تو افزون نیستی. The caliph said to Layli, Are you the one by whom Majnun has lost his mind over and has been led astray? You are not superior to other fair ones. Rumi says, the caliph told Layli, You are not any prettier than the other women that I know of. I don't understand what in the world Majnun sees in you. Now Layli delivers a crushing response to the caliph. گفت خاموش چون تو مجنون نیستی. Layli told the caliph, Be silent, since you are not Majnun. Layli told the caliph, If you want to see the beauty in me, you must look at me through the eyes of Majnun. In other words, you must be able to use the measure and the criteria of Majnun for beauty, not your own criteria. Your problem is that you are very selfish. You think that you are the final authority on beauty and goodness. And if somebody does not fall within your idea of beauty, then she is ugly. Here Rumi teaches that beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. Beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. In other words, if I were to put it in a more philosophical language, what Rumi means is this. Perspective is what matters the most. Perspective. Rumi said, perspective shapes our judgment. Let me give you one concrete example. Religion, the world of religion. There are so many religions out there. That doesn't mean that out of those gazillion religions out there, one of them is true and all the other ones are necessarily wrong. It is not that the founder of one religion got it right and the others got it wrong. Rumi says that's not the case. We have many religions because their founders had different perspectives on God and salvation. The practical lesson in what I just shared with you about prejudice is the following. If you truly want to understand what the other person feels or believes, you must be able to see through his eyes. You must take his lens and look at the situation. You need to look at the situation or that thing from his perspective. In other words, put yourself in his shoes and then judge. That's how you can say, I understand. Rumi says, گر تو خواهی کو تو را باشد شکر پس ورا از چشم عشاقش نگر منگر از چشم خودت آن خوب را بین به چشم طالبان مطلوب را. If you wish that to you he should be sweet as sugar, then look on him with the eyes of lovers. Do not look at that beauteous one with your own eye. Behold the sought with the eye of the seekers. Brothers and sisters, I submit to you that we rarely, if ever, view the world through the eyes of those that we disagree with. No wonder there is so much misunderstanding, so much bad blood and prejudice among different tribes here in our own country, and also all over the world. Kent Will Smith was a Canadian scholar of Islam and comparative religion. He died 20 years ago. He was a wonderful human being and a great scholar. Professor Smith actually taught at McGill University in Canada. He had a unique requirement for non-Muslim students who wanted to attend his classes on Islam. He would ask his students to, for example, fast for a few days or go to a mosque and mingle with Muslims for a while, or just do something that devout Muslims do. This way, you will have some appreciation for what Islam means to a Muslim. Then come to my class and learn more about Islam. Fascinating, fascinating. Kent Will Smith is one of my heroes. He was, by the way, a Christian minister as well. Professor Smith was truly wise. What he asked his student, believe it or not, is actually Sufism 101. Sufis distinguish between knowledge, ma'rifat, and information, or itila'at, right? Sufis ask us to distinguish knowledge from information. Knowledge for Sufis cannot be acquired by reading or attending a class. Knowledge will be gained by living. Today, most Muslims get their knowledge of Christianity through the Quran. Most of us Muslims get our information about Christianity from the Holy Quran, which is a non-starter. You should never, ever learn about an idea or a person through the eyes of its critics. Or many Muslims who want to gain knowledge of Christianity would go on Amazon and buy some books to read. Neither will give them knowledge of Christianity. The only way to know Christianity, as Rumi teaches, is to appreciate Christianity the way a devout Christian does. Then you can claim, I know Christianity. I know that's a tall order. You know, that's a tall order. But that's the source of our problem. That's where prejudice kicks in. Because we rarely put ourselves in the shoes of those that we want to judge. Well, we're running out of time and I have to stop right here. Today, I talked about the second pillar of the ego, which is selfishness, a nasty personality trait. Inshallah, next time, I will talk about some ways that we can deal with selfishness. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.